I'd like to see you try it, you lame excuse for a half dog.
Well, you were making egg foo young in the kitchen. I was in the dining room having sushi.
The Linux Link Tech Show. The Linux Link Tech Show is on. Your link to the latest in GNU Linux and technology. An hour of insightful guests, tech info, and playful banter. Free software, free speech, open source, open mics. Live from the Linux Link Tech Show studio, here are your hosts, Dan, Alan, Pat, and Link. Link it up and take it away. Take it away.
I still think that there's one fantastic intro, man. You know that? That is just some cool crap right there. Hey, everybody.
Welcome.
Welcome. My name is Link, if you haven't guessed it. And welcome to the Linux Link Tech Show here on this wonderful Wednesday.
Thanksgiving Eve.
Yeah, Wednesday Thanksgiving Eve here in the United States. I know that some others of you have Thanksgiving on different days, but tomorrow would be our day to have it.
We kill large birds and eat them.
Yes. We get great masses and quantities of food and put them upon a table where we gorge ourselves for a certain amount of time and then go take naps and watch football. And there you have Thanksgiving in a nutshell.
A great day indeed.
Yes. Great day.
And this is episode 111.
Much turkey and
beer. Is it 111?
It is
111.
111.
Cool.
And 111 is really cool. You know why? Because it's just one shy of 112.
And that is your math lesson for this evening.
That's right.
Thank you very much. Thank you for listening.
That's about after the week I've had this week so far, and it's only Wednesday. Week I've had this week so far, that's about as good as it gets right there. And
thank God it's over for me.
Mm.
I got to work on Friday.
Me too.
Well, I had a shitty week. I was laid up in bed, man, with a freaking bronchitis. I had 103 fever. I felt like death.
Wow.
But I'm feeling better now.
That sounds like all kinds of fun. Anyway, what do we have to talk about today, guys? Anybody?
I would like to give props to a Windows application.
Ooh.
Ding.
No. For more information on this, go to the forums. I posted it there a little while ago. You probably heard me bitching in the past about the transportation software we have at work. And
yes.
Not being able to, it doesn't have automated backup. So you have to actually fire up the program, log into it, go to tools, select the backup wizard, go through the process of the backup. And when it's finished, you got to close the application. You got to do that every day. And it's a pain in the butt. It's an MS SQL server it's based off of. And to top it off, they do not do date or time stamping on the backup file. So it does a daily and a monthly every day.
And you
every
have no,
week,
and
it
you
writes
have no
over
to
previous
daily,
right? No, every week it writes over to you. Like they name it like Monday backup, Tuesday backup. So okay. Every week, the next week overwrites the file.
There's no generation number.
No, there isn't. Then they name the monthly backup file by the month. So if you do a full backup every day, it overwrites the monthly file every day of that month until the end of the month. So you end up with a monthly backup that's the last day of the month, which I think is stupid. And I really think it's really ridiculous. And we asked them for automated backup, and they said, well, maybe in a future release. And then I said, well, send them an email about date stamping the backup so it doesn't overwrite itself all the time. And the response I got back was, don't hold your breath. So, it's like here we are talking directly to the developers, and we cannot get, the stuff that we want. And
the first thing I would think of
in creating an application like this that has critical data is backup. Automating the backup would be the smart thing to do. And date and time stamping would be the next thing I would think of. So
But that would only make sense.
Right, it would make sense.
Well, logical. Much too logical.
It was a pain in the butt. So I found this. I got sick of trying to remember every day to go in there and manually do this backup. So I just went out and started looking at Windows automation tools, and I found one. It's called AutoIt. and I pulled this down. It was free, really small download. Wrote a script. It was about 20 lines long, and the script does exactly that. It brings, starts the application, logs me in, runs the backup utility. And what was cool, though, is I got it so that now it would save the file in a new directory. It would create a new directory in a save location based upon the date. It would save the files into that directory. Close out of the application after the backup was finished, and it was done. It took me about an hour to figure that out, learning the documentation, because I usually work by doing first and seeking answers later. And, so it was little bit by piece. I put it together so it would launch the application.
Does not
got it all the way up
fucking
there, and
manual.
I said, yeah. Then once I got it all working properly, the next thing I said, I need to date stamp this. So then I had to figure out how to, you know, create a date stamp and everything with this application and save it in a directory with a date stamp. It really worked. It was phenomenal. Then I used it, and it created it compiled it into an executable. And I was golden right there. I was happy. I don't give credit to too much stuff on the Microsoft side, but that application, thumbs up. For free. Thumbs up.
Yeah.
What Dan said.
That's what I said. Now, if you want to hear something...
So how was your adventures with the cable people?
Well, it turns out that it was RCN. They contracted out to somebody else, and they put... When they contract out to other people, the third parties, they give them a magnetic sign to put on their van.
Okay.
It just says RCN. But in a nutshell, what happened was last week I came home. Last Wednesday, a week ago today... Came home, there was vans outside in the back. And I mentioned this at the end of the podcast, if you got the raw MP3 or the AUG. And I don't know if it was on the regular MP3, because I was making fun of you, because you took so long to get, and you were calling them to get two-way, and they just showed up at my house. And I assumed it was RCN. Because when I came home, it wasn't the RCN trucks that I usually see. They weren't even working on my house. They were working next door.
Mm-hmm.
And they were making one hell of a racket, too. And when right before they left, they came and they knocked on my door and said, hey, we hooked you up for two-way. And I said, it doesn't do me any good because I don't have cable modem. And it's like, well, we took you up for two-way anyway. And I'm like, all right, whatever. And it didn't even dawn on me because the guy never said who he was from, where he was from. He just said, so I assumed it was RCN.
No ID.
Right. So my neighbor came out and she's, I said, she was talking about how they made a mess of her cabling on the side of the house. They did a hack job. And they had knocked over the recycling, smashed glass all up and down the area here. She had to clean it up, and she was pissed. And she had said, I don't even have RCN, so I don't know what the hell they were doing. And I said, well, you know what? I didn't even think about that. I don't even know if they were RCN. I just assumed because they came up to my house afterwards, and I saw them working on yours. And she said, yeah, I said it didn't look like the RCN truck. She said she looked out. She saw very small RCN up in the front. And she called RCN, and she went through a lot of hassle to get somebody to say what's going on, and nobody that she spoke to was able to verify that RCN was working in this area.
Yeah.
Nobody. So she was concerned. She threatened to call her lawyer and have them get in contact. So some guy called back, left a message on her answering machine and said, look, it's possible that the construction crew was out in that area, and they were hooking you up, the cable in that area, and she has phone service, so they hooked you up with the cable and everything. That's probably what it was. But they didn't say it was a definite. So Monday, I drove back to drop off some garbage in the back, and I noticed my gate was hanging kind of funky. So I went over to the gate, and they ripped the top hinges off my gate.
Oh, nice.
Right. So I was kind of pissed. So, here I am. I'm like, we don't even know if it was RCN, number one. Now they've, I noticed that they damaged property of mine, too, and they damaged the next-door neighbor's property, and they crapped the place up. So I called RCN, and I got on the phone. I said, look, were you out here doing work? And they're like, no, we don't have any record of it. If we were doing work, there would be record. So I said to the lady, after going around for about 20 minutes, I said, look, I'm not so much concerned about the gate. I want to know if it was you guys out here, or is there somebody over here, casing the place out, or something's going on, I'm concerned.
Yeah.
And she's like, well, I don't know, I can't tell, I don't think it was us. I'm like, well, are you sure? Because I don't want to call the cops and then turn around and later find out that, yeah, it was you. And she's like, well, I don't have any record of it being here. So finally I said, could I speak to somebody above you. And she put me through to some other guy, and he's like, well, I don't see any record of it being in here. And he couldn't give me any information. He said, well, look, this is what I'll do. You can file a damage claim, and if you file a damage claim, then they're definitely going to check into it and find out whether it was RCN. Yeah. I said, look, can I get an answer faster than that? I'm not concerned about the damage claim. I don't want to come home and find my house has been ripped off.
Yeah, no, really?
Yeah. So the guy's like, well, I can contact the local dispatcher in your area, have them call you back, and let you know if it was, you know, a local thing. And I'm like, okay, how long is that going to take? So the guy should probably call you back in 24 hours. He called me back a couple hours later, and all he could tell me was there was no record of there being any work done in my area. So I said to him, all right, so I'm going to assume that it wasn't you guys, this is somebody else, and I should be concerned. And he's like, well, it could be the construction division. I'll pass it on to the construction division.
She never bothers to tell anyone what they're doing.
Well, I don't know, because here we are. We've gone through their national number. They couldn't tell me anything that was going on. I gone through the local dispatcher. He couldn't tell me anything that's going on. My neighbor's concerned. I'm concerned. So I went down and filed a report with the police station. I said, look, I've got to run around with them. I don't know what's going on. I just want it on record in case something happens. So they were cool. They filed a report for me. And then, of course, the next day, another local dispatcher calls me up and says, yeah, we had a truck in the area. RCN has said, when we have people that come to the house, the vans are clearly marked.
Yeah, they've got, like, graphics all over the
right,
side of them now.
They're clearly marked. When they come up to the house, they'll introduce themselves. They'll say they're from RCN and, you know, tell you what they did. None of that. This guy couldn't tell where the vans were from. Another neighbor down the street said she saw them out in the back. She didn't see any markings on them, right? The guy never said who he was from. He said, didn't say it to me, didn't say it to my neighbor. He just said, we hooked you up for two-way. I assumed, which was a fault on my part, it was from RCN. The guy called up and said, yeah, it was construction. They were out there. We contracted out to a third party. They had magnetic signs on the side of their van. So, yeah, they say it's them. And then they're going to send me a damage waiver or something like that, too.
Well, it's, we're still going to give you something for the damage.
Go on a cruise with your family.
Yeah. I'm not so much concerned about the damage. I'm just concerned about who the hell was, like, doing whatever they were doing, because they did it to three houses.
Well, at least that's good to know that they're at least upgrading the lines around here again.
Right. Well,
as I know, for the entire time I lived in Bethlehem, they didn't do shit around where I lived.
Yeah. Well, what are you going to do?
You've got a request for farting on the air here.
Do you want me to fart on the air?
He's got to drink more beers.
Yeah, more beers, and then he'll come up with something.
Bag
I'm
of
sure.
Nachos.
Now,
boiled egg.
Here's a tech related thing, an issue, which kind of relates to what we were talking about last week with Steven. That was his name, right, Steven?
Steven Von Nichols.
Steven Von Nichols.
Good interview, man.
Yeah. Oh, he was a great guy. We have a streaming server at work, QuickTime streaming server, two of them, and they're broadcasting using QuickTime Broadcaster. And it gets in internally. We have no problem getting it. Now, here's the catch here, right? This is this whole video streaming, video codec is a mess. It is a disaster. I mean, you got Windows media files, which don't play on Apple unless you have the Windows Media Player. But yeah, if you have the latest Windows Media Player codecs, it might not play on Apple. And then you got the reverse. You got Apple, which has QuickTime, which doesn't play on Windows, but you have to get the QuickTime player. But if you're running at the latest and greatest H.264, MPEG-4 QuickTime format, it doesn't play on Windows no matter what, reliably. Real Player,
that's why we have
maybe play it. Yeah, Real Player might play it. Real Player might not play it. Whatever. It's a mess. So you, no matter what format you stream in, you can't be sure that the person's going to be able to watch it. Because if they're running, if you're doing QuickTime, they got to have QuickTime Player. But if you're running Windows, they got to have Windows Media Player. But if they're on Apple, you can't see it with QuickTime unless you have Windows Media Player. So you got two incompatible formats. It's a mess. And even the version of the format causes incompatibility issues. It's terrible. Now, I wish there was one player to rule them all. And there is, actually, there is.
It's called M-Player.
No, I'm not talking about it.
One player to rule
I'm
them all.
I'm stepping aside from the Linux. M-Player runs on the other ones, but the best I've found so far that running on OS X has been a video LAN client for me.
Yep, runs on Windows 10.
And it runs on Windows, it runs on Linux. MPlayer does a pretty good job, but video LAN client seemed to be the easiest for me. But I can't tell people, get video LAN client, okay? Because
they don't understand that.
They don't understand that. But the thing is, I'm watching this video, the stream. We pick it up inside at work. I can pick it up on video LAN client. I can pick it up on QuickTime. Can't get it on RealPlayer. On the Windows side, we can't get it on Windows because Windows doesn't support the codec. We can get it under RealPlayer under Windows with the MPEG-4 plugin. That seems to work. When I come home, we want to test the stream outside the network, right? I can't connect to the damn thing with either QuickTime or video with QuickTime on OS X. But I can connect to it with Video LAN Client on Linux and Video LAN Client on OS X. And it doesn't make any sense. Like, why can't I connect to Apple's own technology with their own software outside the district?
Because it's a superior Apple product, that's why.
But why could a bunch of Yahoos who threw together Video LAN Client succeed where Apple, who is their own technology, can't? I don't understand.
That's for you.
It doesn't make sense. I sit there and I fire up the QuickTime player, and it just hangs after 10 seconds and says switching transports, which doesn't make sense. We even went so far as to open every single port on the firewall, straight through, right to that machine. Everything was open. That didn't make a difference. But here we are, firing it up under Linux, firing it up under OS X, using Video LAN Client, and it's not a problem. I'm connecting every time. Somebody explain that one to me. Two different servers, the same result.
Linux is better. There you go. There's your explanation.
The problem isn't with Apple. It's with you.
Yeah. 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 And you know what? I bet you if I called up the Apple guys and I said that, they say, well, first off, you know, they say, well, you have something misconfigured. Well, if I have something misconfigured, how come it works in Linux or on or Video LAN Client but not with QuickTime? Then they come back and they say, well, you know what? What's probably happening is the quality of that video stream coming out is just not high enough, not meeting our standards.
Yes.
So we're not going to let you watch it.
You got to upgrade.
All right? You got to improve that. And, you know, I sat here for 2 hours at my house on the phone with the media specialists at work. We tried everything, single codec we could from QuickTime Broadcaster. I mean, we're doing MPEG-4. We're doing H.264, H.263, H.262. We even went to MJPEG. You know, everything that we could, all the different codecs we could try. QuickTime, no way. Video LAN Client, not a problem. Depending on the codec, I could use, I think I got through with Totem.
I don't think Video LAN Client supports H.264 yet.
I can, no.
Yeah,
it does,
you're playing
it?
Yeah.
It does, yeah. If you have the MPEG-4, the latest MPEG-4 libraries, you get that has H.264.
So if you compile it with everything you need.
Yeah, I think there's actually an H.264 library, too. I didn't compile it. I just used the Marilat repository stuff. Yeah, and it worked great.
Cool.
So, you know, it's just so infuriating. And then you go to the forums and they're talking, well, go in and adjust the properties, you know, switch to using a specific transport in this way. And, you know, you can't tell people in order to see this video, you have to go over there, you have to change the transport on your settings, or you have to go download, you know, this player or that player, because it's a nuisance. Why can't we just settle on a few, you know, a few standard codecs that everybody can play?
It's too obvious. Not making money off of it.
And that's what stinks. Because you have what? You have DivX. You have Theora, which anybody can use. But, of course, Windows Media Player and QuickTime do not support Theora or DivX out of the box. You have to go out and download these and install them yourself.
You have to find some third-party stuff.
Right.
For
so
DivX.
It makes it impractical to use this stuff. From the general population, you encode it in DivX. So then you have to end up giving a Windows Media file, a QuickTime file, and then you know, then you can say whether you want to do DivX or Theora or whatever for everybody else. You know, it sucks. It's a mess. It's a nightmare and it's a mess. And I blame you, Link, you bastard.
Speaking of messes, the Debian SID repositories, which Canonix uses partly, is a complete mess right now. So do not do a disk upgrade if you're running Debian SID or if you're running Canonix. Not a good idea. Do not do a disk upgrade. Repeat.
Why is that?
Because the SID repositories are a mess. If you go to the Canonix website, there's a post by Cano, and he links to an email where they describe what the problem is. Mm-hmm. So if you're running Debian SID or anything that's based on Debian SID and it's hitting the Debian repositories, do not do a disk upgrade.
Yeah, I mean, it came back, Jason on the IRC said, can't tell people to go hack settings. He says, isn't that what Linux newbies have been saying about our OS for years? Yeah, to an extent. But, you know, and I can understand that it's getting better on the Linux side all the time. And there's some stuff that's complicated. Particularly, you know, with regards to conversation at hand with the video codecs, you have to kind of hack or turn on support for non-free codecs, so to speak, if you want. But the thing is, you know, on the flip side, it's not any better on Windows or OS X. You know what I'm saying? Because if you have to go down and download extra software, and it still might not work, what's the difference?
Yeah, you're getting screwed either way.
Right. What is the difference? You know, okay, so CNN says, well, we're only going to stream in Windows Media Format. Well, probably the reason why they go and do that is because that's the, you know, that's the most widely supported OS on the desktop right now. That's, you know, majority of those people. So they have a good chance of
getting the people they
want to
watch it. Yeah,
getting the majority of the people. Whereas if they say, well, now we'll put it out in QuickTime, but then the Windows people don't have that by default, so they lose a good portion of the people right off the bat, and then they got to worry about whether what we're going to stream in QuickTime is going to run on Windows because Apple didn't release the software to be able to run the latest codecs on Windows. And then they're like, well, why are we even going to look at DivX or Theora or Xvid or anything else? Because then they're going to have to go out and everybody's going to have to download a third-party application.
It's a bloody mess.
It's not worth it. Read a damn newspaper, Alan.
You're looking at your beer is almost done there, Dan.
That's why I have my backup.
Dan's doing his rant. Rant on, Dan.
Yeah, we haven't heard of Dan's rant in a long time.
Because he hasn't done one in a long time.
Hey, have you heard from Droops lately, Dan?
I heard from him as in...
an email or anything?
I talked to him on the IRC the other day.
How's he doing?
He's doing fine.
What's going on? Anything new going on with the Twatcast?
Yeah, they have a new calendar up and everything.
I gotta check
you and
out.
I are at the end of the month.
Okay.
So
I gotta check that out.
Yeah, they got a lot of people.
That's cool.
So. Yep. And they're working on a new Hacker Media site. And making it easier to upload your content for a twat.
Speaking of postings, somebody posted a story on Dig about your collection of all the different Linux shows and podcasts.
Yeah, I like that one comment. There's non-Linux shows in here. No Dig.
My favorite comment was, they're the most scripted Linux show out there.
Followed up by the other comment later on, the most unscripted. Somewhere in between isn't true.
That's it's pretty funny
I don't
shit.
Understand.
If we're scripted, man, somebody's doing some really lousy writing for me.
Dan's story about when he went jogging with his dog was completely scripted.
Yeah. I'm sure you spent long hours writing
the Hoagie Man stories.
And the Hoagie Man stories. Listen, guys, I know I've been kind of quiet because I've been working on my freaking laptop again here. Those of you who are on the IRC right now, do me a favor. Help me find out which OSS driver I'm supposed to use for a Neo Magic. Crap, what was it again? It is a Neo Magic NM2360. It is an old ass laptop, and also just is not getting along with it. So, well, it does. It works great until you shut it off and try to reboot it, and then it doesn't start back up again. So, probably OSS.
What are you running? Slackware 10.2?
Yeah, Slack 10.2.
At worst, you could probably drop an Opix disk in there and see what it tries to load.
Yeah, but that's going to load also. And I need to go.
Oh, you
I need
go,
to
you
probably
go back
to OSS,
yeah,
in order to get it to work right. But I don't know which freaking driver to use, and I can't find it yet.
But that's deprecated link.
I don't care.
Deprecated.
I don't care.
Big
I
words like tonight. Elsa.
I did a install of Slackware this past Monday because my backup system took a dump, and I was glad to be back in the Slackware environment, you know, doing an install for a while because it just made me appreciate how smooth and
simple,
and fast, nice, and simple it is. What was interesting is for some reason, just I don't know, it was a Red Hat system and it just bit the dust hard. So I fired up Onopix, and it was working great. And I figured I'd do my backup of Onopix, and it was running fine until I forgot that when it boots up and gets a dynamic address from the DHCP server, if you set it for a static afterwards, you got to turn off that DHCP stuff. Otherwise, it goes out and fetches another IP address when the time to live has expired.
Whoops.
And then it messes everything up. But no, I moved it over to Slackware, and it's been pretty smooth since.
I threw Slackware 10 to a crusty old machine at work, and it was fine. The only problem I had was it misidentified the audio driver. It was like a CS whatever module was, and it was slightly off. I just dropped in Nopix and actually damn small to see what module it was using, and I just changed it to that, and after that, no problems.
Yeah, but it was fun and exciting.
Works, man.
Dum, 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 dum.
Tonight we are talking to
Nick Petrelli, editor-in-chief of Tux Magazine.
Have you guys boned up on your Tux Magazine?
I love Tux Magazine.
Tux Magazine is awesome, man. Good stuff.
So I take that as a yes, you did bone up on your Tux magazines.
Well, that's not exactly, I wouldn't call it boning up, but yeah, I read them.
Keep your bone away.
Dan's got this fixation.
You know what? I was reading issue 7, was it, or 8?
Last one was 8.
That talked about the events PDF reader.
Events, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I gave that a shot, and I was like, oh, man, I
it's
love
nice,
that.
Huh?
That is so freaking fast, number one.
Yeah.
I really like how it has the, thumbnail of all the pages on the panel.
Mm-hmm.
And you can go through, and you can highlight and copy stuff out of the PDF.
Yep,
I was
nice.
Just like, man, this is a fantastic reader. And then I also went and took another look at GNU Cache and Giuseppe and K My Money. And I was like, oh, you know. They're looking pretty good. I figured I'd pull the banking information off of my online bank, my checking account, but for some reason I can't get it in. It keeps bombing on me. I might have to submit a bug report. But
took a new cache?
Yeah. Well, all of them do the same thing when I try and import either a QFX. They can download in either QFX or OFX format for. Or yeah, QFX or OFX for Quicken or Microsoft's Money. When I try and import either one of those files into GNU, any one of the applications, it starts going and then it crashes, which bums me out. But it's there. Pretty good stuff.
I've never played with GNU Cache.
It's good. It's a pretty good program until GNOME moved over to the 2.0 series, and it was kind of a pain in the butt to get it on GNOME 2.0. You had to get all the GNOME earlier GNOME GNOME 1.4 or earlier
GNU Cache. Yeah. Yeah, I stopped using that when you had to jump through hoops to try to get it to work.
But it's a great program. It came my money. And Giuseppe are pretty cool, too. And, of course, there's always Checkbook Tracker. Checkbook Tracker is pretty damn good.
Yeah.
For a simple checkbook.
My wife's been using it for, like,
tracking.
Two, 3 years now? Something like that. Long time.
Before we talk to our guest, which we got a call, because if I'm not mistaken, it is 9 o'clock.
9:03.
Yeah, I just want to send a congratulations out to Adrian Bacon and Linux Log for 1 year of podcast.
Woohoo!
Congratulations.
Yep, yep, yep. And he came clean. He records in Windows.
Yes. But, hey, 1 year.
Hey, congrats, Adrian.
he's some of the other ones have fallen by the wayside. And hopefully we'll hear from Sean Parsons in the near future, who was from
the Linux Box.
Alan, do you remember?
No, no. Off the top of my head. Oh, I cannot remember people's names to save my life. So,
oh, you guys don't listen to games and more entertainment radio, do you?
I don't play games.
No, you're so fucking serious.
I don't have time to play games.
That was pretty funny, this last episode they released where they started talking about Slackware and Gentoo and distribution, fighting over whose distribution was better and which window manager was better.
Slackware, so, of course.
it was pretty good. I really love that.
Canonix.
That show. They do Slackware. A fantastic job. And it was a...
Slack.
C4 and Zafan were arguing back and forth, so... Good stuff. Listen to games and more entertainment radio if you're into gaming at all. Might be working with them to do a show on Linux gaming in the near future. All right, we should probably call
Nick.
Pat, who's our guest?
Nick Petrelli,
editor, chief editor of Tux Magazine. You okay there, Link?
Yeah.
Ready?
Just trying to figure out why I cannot find the right... You would think somewhere somebody would list the damn driver for this card.
Neo Magic,
so
right?
So far, I've gone through like 900 web pages, and everybody either says ALSA, or they point me to the frickin' OSS website, which says, oh yeah, OSS will work with that, but it doesn't tell you which frickin' driver to use.
Mm. What is it again? Neo Magic what?
Neo Magic NM2360.
Use the Neo Magic NM2360 driver.
Fuck you.
if you go to their site, go to the Windows driver and you download it and import it with NDS wrapper.
Yeah.
Will it work? What was that again? Neo Magic what?
NM2360.
All right, let's give this guy a ring-a-ring.
Nice dial tone.
Hello?
Hi, Nick.
Yeah.
Hi, this is Pat from the Linux Link Tech Show. How you doing?
I'm sorry, I can hardly understand you.
This is Pat from the Linux Link Tech Show. How are you?
Can you understand me?
Yes, I can understand you.
Okay, great. This is Dan from the Linux Link Tech Show.
Okay, good.
Great. Yeah.
The other voice is really distorted. I can't understand a word.
Yeah, we keep saying that too.
We just want to let you know beforehand that we are live right now. So anything you say will be
okay. Going
out to everybody else in the world. And we're really excited to have you come on today.
Well, thank you.
And
pleasure to be here.
Yeah, you're the senior editor of Tux Magazine.
Editor-in-chief
of Tux Magazine.
Right.
And tell you what, that's a great magazine.
Thank you very much. It's a lot of fun. I love that magazine. Probably one of the most fun. So it's probably the most fun I've had at any magazine I've worked with before. It's just it's unique. It's fresh. It's a new basically a new idea because it's assuming that Linux is going to take over the desktop, and I think that's a valid assumption. It's just a blast. What can I say?
Has this been your first Linux-focused magazine that you've worked for?
No, actually, I launched the original Linux World magazine when it was owned by IDG. There's a long story there. It didn't the magazine. I was in charge of all the editorial direction, but. I didn't get much cooperation from the staff, so the magazine didn't turn out the way I envisioned it. About 6 months later, I moved on to something else, and Eventually, they dropped the magazine and brought it back to life and sold it to another company. I can't think of the name of the other company right now, but so the Linux World magazine that online that you see now is completely unrelated to the original Linux World magazine.
Is that the Linux World? Is that the one that's out on the newsstands now that you're talking about?
I don't think Linux World's on the newsstand. There's Linux Journal, there's Linux Format, there's Linux something else. I can't think of it. There's a third one out there. And there's Linux Magazine, of course. Linux Journal is the same company as Tux. SSC publishes both Linux Journal and Tux. Linux Journal is like the original Linux magazine, period.
Right.
They're the first out with any Linux thing.
So I could have sworn I saw Linux World magazine still on the shelves. I know I picked up a few issues about 6 months ago, but I haven't really paid much attention to it since.
It's possible.
Didn't they all quit?
It's possible they went print.
They all quit, didn't they?
Pat's asking I'm sorry.
If you can relay anything that the other person's saying, that'd be great, because I can't understand anything.
Yeah, no problem. He was saying that, didn't they all quit? Wasn't that the, one of the, that was a publisher that had a lot of problems with half the Linux team leaving? Or most of the Linux team leaving? Was that the same company?
No. This was just a matter of the staff at, when we launched Linux World, it was a web magazine that, and we were using the same staff as Java World and at least a couple of other web magazines. And the people there were just completely overworked because they were trying to put out several web magazines at a time. So, I mean, I don't blame them, but basically, I had a vision for the way Linux World magazine should go, and they just couldn't execute on that vision because they just didn't, I mean, there weren't enough hours in the day, and they were already in the groove as far as the other magazines were concerned, like Java World and so on. They didn't really understand that this was going to take an entirely different approach to Linux publishing. So it ended up folding. Yeah, I ended up leaving because, you know, IDG should have thrown more money at it. That's my own personal opinion, but that's not how it happened, and I ended up moving on. They ended up folding the magazine, and then they brought it back to life again a little bit later. Mark Kappel was the editor then. He did a great job. Mark Kappel's a great editor. And then they eventually sold it to that other company.
Now, what is the, in your opinion, what are the advantages of an electronic magazine over a print magazine, and what are some of the disadvantages?
Well, I mean, Tux is free. Yeah, that's an advantage. A big disadvantage is that it's really hard to, financially, it's really hard to justify or explain to an advertiser that it's worth advertising in an electronic magazine like a PDF format magazine. They don't see that as being a viable advertising medium at this point. So that's a drawback. Personally, I love print. You know, I mean, I want to hold the magazine in my hand and flip through it and so on. I think there is a way to do electronic publishing. I think there are some ideas, ways to make it appealing to advertisers and not in any way offend the reader. But a lot of it is experimental. I don't think Adobe Acrobat Reader right now supports all of the ideas that I would have in order to make that happen. When it does, though, I think, you know, I've got some ideas. I'm not going to let the cat out of the bag yet, but I have some ideas on how we could add advertising to the magazine and make it compelling. so that advertisers would want to put ads in Tux magazine. You know, the big disadvantage as a reader is just that, you know, you have to sit at the computer and read it. You can print it out, I suppose, and a lot of people do. But I think you really lose something when you print it out. I mean, you lose the color unless you have a good color printer. And it just doesn't, it's not the same thing, you know what I mean? It's not the same thing as picking a magazine up off the shelf and reading it. So
I understand what you're saying. Way back in the day when I first registered the Linux Link domain name, the intention was to create a Linux newsletter or magazine. And, you know, that was, what, 5 years ago. And we never did anything with it except start this show. And we pushed around the idea of maybe putting out, like, a Linux magazine. And one of the things that we were looking at in regards to an electronic format was not only being able to include content, but it would be cool to include multimedia, which right now PDF doesn't seem to be able to, it doesn't support yet.
Right. That's an element of what I'm thinking about making advertising compelling. You know, I mean, taking advantage of multimedia would make a big difference, I think.
Because that's one of the things, like, we thought, oh, would we put it out in PDF? Would we, you know, make it a web-based format that you could have video and Flash in there? You know, pros and cons of doing stuff like that.
Yeah.
It'd be cool if there was one format that would support all of that.
Right.
And have the layout capabilities of PDF.
Linking and then high-quality look and feel.
But your magazine, man, that's a work of, that's beautiful.
Good stuff.
I can hardly hear breaking up, but Tux is a work of art. It's, and that's entirely thanks to Garrick. He's our art director. He basically designed the whole thing himself, and is in charge of making it look the way it does. He does Linux Journal as well, but he's been pretty much keeping the keeping Linux Journal the way it used to be. In other words, before he came on board. So Linux Journal is not a good example of what he can do. I think Tux is really a great example of what a great artist Garrick is.
Speaking of designing the magazine, all of our listeners really want to know, are you using Linux to generate your PDFs? And if so, or if not, what kind of software are you using to get that look?
You'd have to ask Garrick about that. I'm not exactly sure. He's actually been switching, using different programs, experimenting with different programs, because some programs he's discovering generate much larger PDF files than others. And, you know, you end up with the same content either way. I'm not exactly familiar with, I've got it in an email somewhere. He described it to me, but I don't want to waste your listeners' time with me digging through my email to try and find out.
Fair enough. The contributors you have.
I'm sorry?
Oh, go ahead. Finish what you were saying.
I'm sorry, that's not a good connection, so I'm not understanding everything you're saying.
Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off there. I was just saying, go ahead and finish what you were saying.
That was it, pretty much.
Oh, okay. The contributors you have to the magazine, are do you accept submissions from outside, from just anybody, you know, if they, like some of the other online magazines like Linux Gazette, or do you have a core set of contributors?
We have both. I mean, we have a lot of people who submit their ideas, say they want to write an article, and you know, if it's a good idea, but we'll coach them a little bit and accept that article. for publication. And then we have, you know, a few authors that just have been outstanding at understanding the message and mission. So we reuse, and we keep going back to them for articles as well. The point of Tux is obviously to appeal to the desktop user. I'm trying to keep it as point and click as possible. I realize that a lot of new users still go to the command line, whatever. But just as a matter of principle, there are a lot of things you can do now, especially with CD desktop, that people who are seasoned Linux users are used to doing at the command line, and a lot of them don't even know that you can do it so easily from the graphical UI. It's amazing. Some of the authors who I know are quite talented are unaware of some of the things you can do with the KDE UI, how you can mount Samba shares and things like that just by point and click. So, I mean, that's what I'm trying to teach. I'm trying to keep them focused on that because Tux is for those users who don't want to learn the command line. You know, they want to just get their work done. Do their word processing, browse the web, and maybe play some games and so on.
So what is your impression of where Linux is at for the general user desktop?
I think it's there with a couple of exceptions. Drivers, that's the biggest one. And awareness of some of the applications that are available that people say aren't available, like an equivalent to Quicken, for example. People just assume there is no such thing in Linux, and of course there are like two or three different alternatives you can use, and even a couple of web-based alternatives you can use to Quicken. But the biggest one of all is drivers. Otherwise, the Linux desktop is already as usable, and I think in many ways more usable than Windows, which is obviously the dominant desktop operating system. But the drivers are a really big problem. I mean, especially in network drivers. Somebody's plugged in a wireless network card, and in Windows, you type in a couple of things, and it works. In Linux, you got to be a geek to get it working, if it's possible to get it working at all. That's a shame. That's got to change.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. Now, a lot of the stuff I hear coming from different camps with regards, particularly to the Linux wireless drivers, is one, companies are not going to release the source, the specifications to write the drivers, and two, a lot of these cards are using software to control the frequency, and if they were to release the source, that could end up, you know, allowing a person to set the wireless capabilities to a frequency that is used by other
devices.
Media devices and interfere with actual FCC regulations.
Mm-hmm.
And that seems, you know, it's unfortunate because how can you put out a open source driver if it makes it illegal to distribute that code based upon FCC regulations?
Yeah, that's a good point. I don't have an answer to that one. The biggest problem I see is that it's a financial issue until Linux dominates the desktop or at least shares an equal amount of market share with Windows. It's not in a company's best interest to invest the time and effort in building, making a driver. Now, other people can write drivers if they would just release the details about their cards. But in some cases, they're reluctant to do that because they may have... the driver may install some bytecode to the card that they want to keep proprietary, because that bytecode is what makes their card better than another card. In other words, you know, it's that edge they have over another network card or something. You know, the way they handle that particular device, and they can keep that proprietary with the Windows driver, whereas, you know, with Linux, it's a little bit more difficult. Now, if someone could just educate them that they can release the bytecode as binary, and the Linux driver can load it into the card. I mean, there are instances where Linux drivers do that already. But it's a matter, again, of educating the vendors of these network cards and getting them to understand that, that they can keep what they... their intellectual property proprietary, and still release enough information to make make it work easily on Linux.
And that's what we have Tux Magazine for, to educate those people.
I don't know. I don't think it's going to. I don't think it's going to educate the vendors so much. It may. I mean, I'm hoping to get a demand, to create a demand. I mean, one of the columns I wrote was, not only refuse to buy the product that doesn't work with Linux, but call the vendor and say, does your product work with Linux yet? You know, I mean, I had, and tell them specifically, I had to buy this competitor's product because, you know, it does work with Linux, whereas yours doesn't. I'd really prefer to buy yours, so do you have a driver ready yet for me? You keep calling them every couple of weeks like that, and they're going to understand that there is a market, and the market's going to another vendor, to a competing vendor, and that'll get them off their rear ends. So that'll get them to educate themselves as to what they can do about providing a driver.
That's a darn good idea.
I've had that case myself. You know, where I bought before I checked a scanner that is totally useless to me on Linux, and it ticks me off that I can't use it on Linux. If I could return it, I would, and I would call them up and say, I bought the scanner, this doesn't work on Linux, I returned it and exchanged it for brand X, because, you know, it's not the scanner I wanted, but it works on Linux, so I'm going to settle for it until you guys provide me a Linux driver. You know, that the key there is telling the vendor specifically what competition you bought. Because that tells them two things. One, they lost a sale. Two, another vendor is supporting Linux. So therefore, you know, the person who you talk to is eventually going to go to somebody that matters and says, well, this other vendor is supporting Linux, why aren't we? You know, obviously, there must be enough demand for that guy to do it. Why can't we do it?
Absolutely. So what kind of... what kind of wonderful things can we expect to see coming up in next month's Tux Magazine? Or is it January, right? No, it's next month.
Can you relay that? Because I didn't understand that.
Yeah. What exciting...
Hello?
Hello? What exciting topics can we see coming up in next month's Tux Magazine?
What's coming up in next month's Tux Magazine?
Yeah, what exciting topics.
That
yeah, that's what Link asked. He wanted to know what exciting topics can we see coming up in next month's Tux Magazine.
In next month's magazine, we have another article on an alternative desktop. I believe the one we covered this time was Window Maker.
Yeah.
That was a good one. Of course, we always have Mingo Parfait, Q&A with Mingo Parfait, and she introduces a new friend of hers, Bunny, who's OCD, has obsessive compulsive disorder. She has to use the word armadillo, I think it is, in everything. So she talks a little bit about her favorite distributions, because somebody asked, we get so many emails asking what distribution they should use, and obviously there's no had an answer to that, but you know, she gives her opinions about that. And
you tell them to use Slackware, right?
Yeah, right. I think everybody at Tux is sold on Kubuntu. I don't know if you guys have, you know, liked that or played with it or whatever, but looking at the articles and from what I, you know, from what I've played with, because I've played with it too, I'm rapidly shifting from Debian over to Kubuntu, which is, again, Kubuntu's based on Debian, but it's based on Debian Unstable, which is what I was using anyway, and it has everything I want. So it's easy to install, easy to use. Pretty good. It's pretty good stuff.
I've been
What do you guys use?
Well, there's a mix here. I've been mostly Ubuntu, and well, actually Slackware and Ubuntu, and some Debian for myself. Link has been using Ubuntu
Slackware. Ubuntu, Debian.
And Pat is, he's Canonics, man. Pat gives two thumbs up
for
Canonics.
Canonics.
And Alan's Slackware, and I thought, are you Ubuntu or still Slackware? You just what?
No, I'm just Slackware.
Alan's just Slackware.
Slackware and Macintosh. Slackware.
Uh-huh. I install Slackware, and, you know, it's okay. I'm so spoiled on the Debian package system that, with Slackware, I just didn't. You know, it's one of those things where you have to get used to it. Once you're used to it, you like it, you know. I suppose I'm not crazy about so much of the commercial ones. I'm not really that crazy about SUSE or Mandriva. Mandriva's nice. I played with the 2006, but as Mango pointed out, she paid $132 to join the Mandriva Club in order to get it and have a decent amount of support. And I look at Mandriva, and as nice as it is, I just don't think it's worth $132, especially not when you can download Kubuntu and you get basically the same experience.
What do you get for $132?
Hard if I know. I mean, basically, you know, access to they say access to the fastest FTP download servers and so on. But as a matter of fact, I mean, right now they said the servers were overloaded. You know, basically, even if you pay it, you're still going to have to wait. So it doesn't seem like it makes any sense to me. I used to use Gentoo all the time, and I liked Gentoo. Gentoo was nice, but
a lot of compiling.
But because we were getting so many questions about other distros, I started using the other distros to see what people were talking about, and I ended up not going back to Gentoo.
Do you miss it?
Sometimes, yeah. I mean, there's some cool things about compiling everything yourself. That's what Gentoo's all about. But there are also some drawbacks. I mean, it's really annoying to. I mean, you get an update to KDE in
2 days.
Unless you got a dual opt-around system or something, you know, you basically set it to compile before you go to bed and hope that it doesn't encounter an error overnight. Hope it's done by the time you work the next morning. And that's the problem. I mean, if you know, it's going to compile like 40 packages and it fails on the third one. You know, you wake up in the morning and you're still 37 packages behind.
Yeah, I used Gentoo for a while, and although I did like it and enjoy it at the time, one thing that kept getting frustrating is after you've compiled like 3 or 4 packages, and then it tells you have to go in and fix 32 configuration files, and it's like, whoa.
Yeah.
So after a while, it did.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it was. I think it was a great novelty. It was a good idea. I don't see how anybody can have the patience with it forever.
But
I mean, you know, I'd much rather have other people compile my programs for me, unless absolutely necessary. Especially, you know, when you run into a problem, because I use Gentoo Unstable, of course, because that way you get all the latest stuff. And something doesn't compile, you got to go out to the Gentoo website and check the forums and find out what the issue is. And sometimes you have to fix it yourself. And I mean, how many people are going to do that? I can't imagine that there's a huge user base of Gentoo.
Right. Well, I'll
tell you what. Going to like the Linux World Expos and stuff like that, you notice that there's a gigantic group of people always hanging around the Gentoo booth.
Really?
And if we say anything bad about Gentoo, we get a lot of hate mail.
And they're weird looking people too.
Okay. Well, let me just qualify that. I loved Gentoo as long as I was using it. I just got frustrated with it. I mean, I'm just too busy to have to compile everything all the time.
Right. I think that's what a lot of people run into with that particular distribution. The people are really, really hardcore, and they want to make everything their own. Gentoo's a great distribution for that. For people that want to, you know, be able to run over to their desktop and use it real quick, and if they have to install something real quick to use it, they can do that. They normally migrate off to a different distribution.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think I'm going to pretend I'm a Gentoo fanatic for a moment. My answer to my complaint would be, well, that's not how you're supposed to use it. You're supposed to get your system running the way you like it and leave it that way, you know, unless there's something major that you want to upgrade and use.
Right.
But how many Gentoo users really act that way, behave that way? I just have a hard time believing that very many people actually approach Gentoo that way. Because if you're going to compile everything yourself, that's the same kind of person who wants to have the latest and greatest of everything. You know, so they're going to be compiling stuff at least every week, if not every few days.
I don't know. I never really got past the compiling stuff for the first few days phase myself. You know, 4 days into a Gentoo install, I was still trying to get X to work, so pretty much I switched to something else.
Yeah. Well, I was fortunate. I got it working pretty fast, but, you know, like I said, you know, you get an update to X, or you get an update to X. Man, that's a long compile.
You aren't kidding.
That's a weekend. It's called a weekend.
Yeah. Sure, and I mean, the whole time you can't use your computer or so.
You can use screen.
Slowly.
Yeah, links. Or links.
Slowly.
Links, yeah, again, links. I mean, you got a dual Opteron, you can use it, basically, and you let everything. Or if you're a real geek and you got, like, three or four Gentoo machines in your house, you can just distribute the computer. Compilation process with, what is it, DistCC or something?
Yep,
right.
You know, offload. You know, I did that for a little while, but with my Debian machine, another Debian machine is being the second machine compiling, but as soon as there was a difference in compiler versions, that doesn't work anymore, so...
Yeah, and when you try and do that on a couple 486s, it really doesn't make a difference.
Yeah.
Now you were talking.
Well, I'm looking to see what Suze's got now. Suze finally sent me the Novell Linux desktop, and Suze 10 is in the mail. So I'm curious to see what they're doing. I imagine you've heard all the about the move to GNOME, and also the couple of people who quit Suze.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Back and forth.
Back and forth, back and forth between GNOME and KDE, right?
Yeah.
They're not going to do it. They are going to do it.
Yeah. I think, I'm guessing here, purely guesswork, but I think there was a political war between Zimian and Novell and Zimian One. I think that was, I think that's what that all about.
I think you're probably. What is your impression? Here's a good question for you, right? I'm sure that you have gone through a lot of Linux distributions, and you know the people that you work with have gone through a lot of Linux distributions. What is your opinion of the size of the Linux distributions that we have out today, and do you think that that has any effect on a person that might, you know, just be getting into Linux? Like, for instance, you know, Ubuntu comes on one disk, right? Slackware comes like on 8 CDs or 8 DVDs now or some crap, like, you know,
SUSE with 5.
Not Slackware.
Yeah, SUSE 10, you have to have your own delivery truck to get it or something like that. Do you think that that makes do you think that that makes an impact on people that are just getting into Linux, just installing it?
I'm not quite understanding your question. Like I said, you're breaking up, but I think I get the gist of it, and it's I haven't gotten SUSE 10 yet, so I can't tell you about that. But I do know that a lot of people don't want to be dealing with that much, you know, that many CDs in order to install Linux. That was one of the reasons why when we did a book on Fedora 3, or I think it was 3. Even though it takes 2 CDs, at that time it was on 2 CDs, the official version, they cut out half the stuff and put it all on 1 CD in the book, just because they know that people don't want to deal with it, having to install it from 2 CDs, because it does get big and unwieldy. Yeah, I love the idea of you install the basic system, and if you want anything else, use the package manager and let it grab the rest of the stuff from the web. I hate that. I know it's not a very popular among the open. I know it's not popular at all among the open source folks, but I think Linspire does a fantastic job of doing just that. I mean, it's basically one CD. There's a second CD for extras if you really want to install some extras. But the click and run, I mean, I don't know if you guys have ever tried click and run, but it'll blow you away. They got it right as far as making it so easy to find and install whatever it is you want.
Okay, so why don't you run Linspire?
I'm sorry, I can't understand you. What?
Why don't you run Linspire?
I think because it's using an older version of KDE, I like the latest version of KDE. That's the drawback of a product like Linspire for people like me. For the average desktop user, that's not going to be an issue. But because they customize it, they're always going to be behind. If they left, you know, obviously if they shipped their product with straight, you know, generic KDE, they could be much more up to date, but they get in there and they customize it and tweak it. And I think their customizations are pretty good ones. But like I said, I just happen to like the latest versions. So
now, see, that's
I do boot Linspire for some reason, for some things rather. Use a couple of programs that I happen to install using Quick and Run. And I'm just too lazy to port them over to my other distribution.
Now, it's an interesting thing, because I've never used Linspire. I have nothing against Linspire. I'd be interested in trying it out. I have used Qlix, which I guess is kind of built off the Nopix package management system. And I've often wondered, I mean, you have Ubuntu or, you know, Ubuntu and Debian packages have a utility called Synaptic, which is getting closer to kind of what Linspire seems to have with Click and Run. It doesn't seem like it would take that much more effort to build, you know, a kind of a Click and Run type interface with the nice, you know, description and maybe some screenshots. I mean, it would take a lot of work up front, but the back end, I think, is pretty much in place.
You're right, and it makes me wonder why other people haven't done it yet, because it's just tedious work. It's not hard to do. It's not hard to actually make happen. Clicks is an exception because, they take a whole different approach to how you download and use packages and stuff. But I don't know why other people, I mean, the Kubuntu package manager is called Adept and people like that, but none of that stuff holds a candle to Click and Run. I have to say, Linspire has one big advantage there. Even if somebody does duplicate all of the ease of use features of Click and Run, the thing they're going to be missing is the fact that Linspire makes deals with companies so that you can buy a lot of commercial software at a discount. You can't do that with free. I mean, you know, who's going to do that with an open source version of Click and Run? Nobody. You know, there's nobody to make a deal with. I happen to like that because there are a couple of commercial packages I like, and it's cool to get like 75% off the price of that package just because I happen to be running Linspire. It really makes the cost of Linspire worth it because it pays for itself if you buy just one or two commercial packages.
And you know what, that brings me up to another question I wanted to ask you in regards to commercial distributions, particularly Linspire. One of the advantages that you have if you run Linspire is you can actually purchase a legal DVD player to use on Linux, the DVD software, a license to run. As far as I know, you cannot do that in any other distribution. Right, you can. But no other distribution...
Yeah.
You have the capability of doing that.
Yeah, someone corrected me on that. This next issue of Tux. I mean, I said, I don't know of any distribution that lets you play a DVD right out of the box like that. And I had a Linspire fan and someone from Linspire correct me on that, say that Linspire does. I mean, in the box, you can play a DVD. Now, you can buy a commercial DVD player, too, which is better than the one you get for free, but it does it right out of the box, and that is a big advantage. I mean, it's going to be a big advantage for people who just don't want to deal with the issues of downloading that live DVD CSS thing, you know, and configuring everything to get a DVD to play.
And you know, then you also have the proprietary codecs that Linspire has seemed to have made a deal to get also, and. You know, you having your finger on the pulse of the Linux community and the future of where it's going. Last week we had Stephen Von Nichols on who said he has the impression that in a year, none of this is going to matter, particularly with the proprietary codecs. He had a very optimistic view. I'm still a little reserved. I'm concerned about it. I mean, for a Linux user to play Windows Media Codecs, there really isn't a legal option other than Linspire. And I think that's kind of unfortunate. It would be nice if, as a Kubuntu or a Canonix or Slackware user, that we could do that legally, even if it meant, you know, purchasing the codecs to do it at a reasonable price.
Yeah. I mean, how much does Linspire pay to be able to offer that? I have no idea. You know, would it be feasible to do that in the open source community? I don't know if, in fact, I can almost guarantee that Microsoft, for example, would not license its codec to, say, the Debian maintainers group, you know. I just don't think it's going to happen. You know, even if the people came up with the money, I just don't think Microsoft would agree to license it because they're not licensing it to a corporation or a company. They're licensing it to just a group of volunteers. I could be wrong about that. I know that Debian, they're basically managed by the, I'm sorry, the name escapes me, but it's an organization. And if they incorporated or something, maybe that would change change the whole dynamics of that. I hope Stephen La Nicholas is right and that it won't matter. I mean, because, what I said in one of my columns in Tux and is that I mean, why bother using Windows media files in the first place? And I realize that some websites do that, and so you have very little choice about it. But, you know, I'm hoping that as Linux conquers the desktop, more and more people are just going to move away from those proprietary formats.
You know what? Right before we talked to you on, called you up, I had a little issue in the same format as that what you're talking about right now. Why not use a non-proprietary codec? And one of the problems that you come across, you know, on the Linux side, hey, we got Theora, we got Xvid, you know, there's DivX. It's easy for us to get those codecs, that support. But on the Windows side, you know, you have to go out to third-party software developers, you know, some website to download the codecs. And sometimes it's some guy that's out there in the community that isn't part of any corporation that's providing a plugin or a library so that your media player can play a Theora file, so to speak. It's unfortunate that's not out of the box. It doesn't let you do that on the Windows side or on the Apple side.
Yeah.
It's a mess.
Yeah, it is a mess. Yeah, you're right. Somebody ought to write a good Qt app and port it, you know, basically, you know, because it's multi-platform, or a Java app, and include the codecs with it. Let it, you know, so that it can run on all platforms and make it freely available.
Yeah, that would
so,
be.
You coders out there, get busy.
That would be nice. And again, like I said, the only downside with you know, like Qt or any other app, that if it's not included in Windows, if you have to send somebody out to download it from another site, people just get confused and frustrated by that.
Yeah.
Which is unfortunate.
Yeah, well, maybe you could tie it to Firefox or something. I mean, when you got people at Microsoft using Firefox, apparently that's popular enough that people will be willing to go out and download it. So,
well, I hope so. So let's talk about Linux gaming for a minute.
Uh-huh.
Gaming in general. You guys did an article on Sedega for, what was it, issue number 7?
Right.
What's your opinion on the Linux gaming environment, with or without products like Sedega?
Well, I want more native Linux games, but I just subscribed to Sedega. I got Sedega and subscribed to Trends Gaming. Oh, I guess about a week ago. I got World of Warcraft running, but it wasn't easy. It was a real pain in the neck. And, in fact, it was the latest World of Warcraft upgrade broke it, so it doesn't run on Linux anymore. So we need a company like Sedega, but we need, I mean, like Transgaming, and we need Sedega, but we need more people hard at work making that stuff not only work, but make it really easy to set up work. The fact that, you know, when you're installing World of Warcraft and it asks you for the next CD and you can't eject the CD, you know, and paying CDs, is ridiculous. I mean, I can't imagine why Transgaming can't solve a problem like that. That seems like a pretty simple problem to solve. I solved it personally just by opening up a terminal window and logging in as root and ejecting the CD, you know, loading the next one and so on. But they don't even have instructions to do that on the website. So I'm not that thrilled with Sedega, but I'm glad that they're at least that, you know, they're out there making some of these things run on Linux, but the real solution is just to write native Linux games. And the only way you're going to get companies to do that is when Linux gets more market share. Heck, PC games are not even are just like fading out altogether. They're dwindling down quite a bit because the consoles are getting so good. So maybe it'll never happen. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I've talked to some people who have theorized. I mean, you got two big competing technologies. You got DirectX, and then you got OpenGL. And you got Apple on the side of OpenGL, and you got Linux supports OpenGL. And if more developers would use OpenGL as opposed to and OpenAL as opposed to DirectX, that it might be make it easier to port their games over to Linux or Mac OS and be able to support multiple platforms as opposed to just Microsoft with its DirectX.
Well, do you know who owns the patents to OpenGL?
Who does?
Microsoft.
Hooray!
They bought it from SGI. They bought the patents in a deal with SGI. So, if it's a matter of, you know, going to OpenGL to avoid Microsoft patent issues, it's not going to happen. It's not avoiding them. Because Microsoft can just let the hammer fall whenever it feels like it. Basically, if Microsoft sees too many games going to OpenGL, the company can start charging fees in order to use their patented technology. So, personally, I don't see there being that much of a difference except in what's supported right now. I mean, obviously, OpenGL is supported more on Linux than DirectX has to be supported indirectly through, like, Sudeika and so on.
When did Microsoft purchase the OpenGL patents?
They made a big deal with SGI, gosh, a couple of years ago, at least 2 or 3 years ago. Basically, typical Microsoft strategy, you know, they're basically bailing them out because they were having financial troubles. And it's like, we'll give you money if you'll give us your patents. And they did it. That's what they needed.
Well, now you rained on my parade there.
What's that?
I said, now you rained on my parade. I was kind of, had that last bit of hope.
Yeah. Sorry.
That's all right. I'll just have to give Sudeika a whirl. So, you have only tried World of Warcraft under Sudeika?
Yeah, I got I got it working originally and played it, and it was great. But you know, maybe played at least as fast, if not faster, than playing it under Windows. But World of Warcraft had a patch, an update, and it doesn't run under Linux now. Can I get it working again? Probably, but I haven't taken it. I don't really have enough time to play games to have taken the time to try and fix it. I'd love to fix it because I really like World of Warcraft. I don't know if you guys are gamers or not, but I love World of Warcraft. It's a great game. I'm a big fan of City of Heroes too. I just got that for the kids, and I've been getting addicted the last couple nights myself. It's a lot of fun.
Now, will that run under Sudeika, City of Heroes?
Haven't tried it yet, so I don't know.
I didn't look up the they're on their gaming list because I'm glad I talked to you about that because I was really interested in trying out Sudeika, and one of the things that I was interested in trying out was World of Warcraft, because I hear so many good things about this game. I figured, hey, you know, I'll try it out with Sudeika, but maybe I better wait a little bit.
You can get it to work. Ultimately, the way I got it working was I just copied it over from my Windows partition over to my Linux partition. It was just a whole lot easier to do that than to wait for it to go through all the update processes and stuff like that. You know, it takes like an hour to download and update your World of Warcraft after you've installed it. And it worked great that way. I had to change some permissions in order to do it, because when you copy it from like a different file system like BFAT or NTFS, the permissions get all changed. And so I just did, you know, like a change mod dash capital R, you know, redundant, just to recurse through the directories, add write and execute permission to the files, and that fixed everything. And it worked great. What can I say? You know, it doesn't work, but like I said, I'll bet a, you know, half an hour's worth of work and I can get World of Warcraft running again. And I recommend it. It's a great game. I mean, I think Blizzard really nailed the market, because if you're into that kind of thing, you know, massively multiplayer online games, the big problem with them up till now has been that the player base has been pretty much hardcore gamers who want everything to be so challenging that if you're a casual gamer like me, you know, who's not going to invest, you know, my life in this game, it makes the game almost impossible to play. I mean, EverQuest 2, for example, I tried that out, and that's like a full-time job if you actually want to do anything.
Right.
World of Warcraft is challenging enough to be fun so that you have to think and use strategy, but easy enough that you don't feel frustrated all the time. So I think they really struck a great balance there. And it shows the market share. I mean, they're killing everybody else. They're cannibalizing the other MMORPG markets. They're stealing users from other games. Last time I looked, they had 22% of the market share, which was equal to Lineage 2. And they're growing, whereas all the rest are shrinking. So they must be doing something right.
True. Well, it'd be nice if they came out with a native Linux version. But
I wish they'd make a Linux version.
Well, we're gonna have to start closing up here because we just got knocked off of BinRev, so that means we lost half our live audience. Anything you wanna throw out there for the good of the cause?
Encourage readers to go to www.tuxmagazine.com and subscribe and download. It's for, you know, subscriptions are free. Download the PDF files and read them. Submit your questions to Mango Parfait if you've got questions on how to do anything. And keep an eye on Linux Journal. There are going to be some changes there too. So that's pretty much my advice.
Let me ask you a couple of questions quickly before we leave. Circulation for Tux Magazine. Would you be able to tell us that?
Last time I saw a number, it was like 50,000, but that was at least 2 or 3 months ago, so I'm sure it's much more than that at this point.
Okay. Who really is Mango Parfait?
And it's hard... It's really hard to gauge because it shows up on, like, Nutella. You know, the people are circulating it without actually subscribing. So there are a lot of readers out there we don't know about.
Right. And let me guess, your advertising model is based upon your subscription rate, obviously. That's how you can...
I'm sorry?
Your advertising... To get more advertisers or your advertising revenue is based upon your subscription rate. Correct.
Right, and it's also based upon what we know about our subscribers. And when the magazine starts getting circulated on the P2P networks, then there's a lot of subscribers out there we don't know anything about. So it makes it hard for us to go to an advertiser and say these are the people who read Tux. That's why we want. That's mainly why you have to subscribe. very little to do with, you know, we don't want to use your email address or anything, but we want to keep track of who the reader is, so that we know, which advertisers to approach and what to tell them about what the readership is like. I think that it would be easier to get advertisers if it was a print magazine. I'd love to see it go to print. Phil Hughes, the publisher, is just sold on the whole PDF format thing, and he's kind of a visionary, so maybe he's right. I'll be eating crow about the print thing. If as the PDF format grows and you can do more with it, it's entirely possible that that will end up being the wave of the future. The magazine published at least in this way, whether it's in PDF format or not.
All right. Last question. People want to know, who really is Mango Parfait?
I'm not telling.
I didn't think so.
All I can tell you is that Phil picked her, handpicked her, and she and I butted heads for a while there, but I'm not editing her nearly as heavily anymore. So she's got a lot more free reign now than she has.
Is Mango Parfait really a she?
What?
Is Mango Parfait really a she?
I'll take a look at her picture. Of course she is.
Yeah, well, the picture's just, you know. There's a lot of guys out there on some of those, what is it?
Training websites?
Yeah, they'll talk to you and they'll say they're she's too, you know.
Dan wants her to show some leg.
Well, yeah, you've got to, I mean, from a publishing standpoint, you have to remember that the reason why we have a picture like that is so that if she ever leaves, you know, if she moves on, we want to keep the Mango Parfait personality alive. That's like, I don't know if you knew that when Infoworld ran Robert X. Cringely, there were like half a dozen Robert X. Cringelys, you know. They just, when one author left, the other one picked up where he left off, and they just kept the personality going.
Yeah.
I chose to structure Mango Parfait in that way so that if she ever decides to, she doesn't want to be writing it anymore or whatever, then we can find a replacement without having to give up the personality.
All right. Well, we want to thank you for coming on. We appreciate you taking the time to come on and talk about our magazine.
It's my pleasure.
Your magazine. Definitely fantastic job you're doing.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate that.
And, you know,
and I appreciate you having me up.
It's great because it's not just a magazine for new Linux users, but it always has something for, like, everybody in there.
Yeah, we try to keep it that way, you know. Like I said, it's a blast. I'm having a great time with it.
Well, you keep having a great time, and I'll keep enjoying the issue. So thank you very much.
Yes, thank you.
And I want to wish you a happy holiday.
Yeah, happy Thanksgiving to everybody.
Yes, thank you. And, again, thanks for coming on, and we'll talk to you later.
Thanks a lot. Keep up the great work.
Have a good one. Bye.
Have a good one, everybody. Bye-bye.
Okay.
Dun, 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 hey, I can talk again.
I need a new goddamn mic.
I'm telling you, you need to buy one of these $15 cheapo ones from Radio Shack that I use.
Santa is coming.
You know what, Stank? Like, the quality, the connection this week.
Wasn't that good?
It's not as good as it was last week.
Yeah? Did we have a lot of people connected
to
the...
No.
This new phone client you're using, I don't like it. I don't like that format.
But, I mean, when we talked with Stephen last week, it was beautiful.
He sounded great.
I suspect that he might have been on a cordless phone, because I always notice
if the person's on a cordless phone, you get that double compression going on.
Crap.
Dinks.
Yep. No, you get double echo suppression and all that stuff going on cordless phones, and some people, have a real hard time with that.
Now, what people don't realize is, like Mango Parfait and Robert Kringley, we've had about 15 Allens already on this show.
Oh, yeah.
We just keep, you know, Allen quits that, and we that cycle in
that picture's
Allen.
The original Allen.
Yes.
That's right.
But he's changed about... In fact, if I'm not
in
mistaken...
In fact, we even had Akin as Allen
right
once,
before
so no
Pat
one even
joined
knew
the show, Pat was Allen for a while.
Yeah, right.
And then
here we go. We just move him in,
move
him out.
He's actually a 4-foot-tall pygmy.
Yeah. Oh.
The small hands are good for getting into the, you know,
the
real hardware.
Yeah, the real Allen looks nothing like the picture. We just, that was, you know, something we found in a wallet.
I love the hat, though.
The hat's the best, man.
Woo!
What else?
What else?
I tried Sousa 10.
In your description of me.
Sousa 10-1 Alpha. I shouldn't have. Well, it's an alpha release, and we'll leave it at that. I'll try it out once it comes stable release.
Now, how many discs did that come with, Pat?
Five.
Five? DVDs or CDs?
CDs. So I got it off of BitTorrent.
Holy moly.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
That's a lot of stuff. How many do you have? How many do you actually have to put in
five.
To like get it installed? You really have to go through
yeah,
all five?
I went through all five.
You're shitting me.
I kid you not. You know, I thought like all
wow.
all like the QT development applications were installed. I look at the applications on the menus and stuff, and there's hardly anything. But like I said, it's an alpha release, so I'm not going to judge it, you know. The next thing I'm going to try is this PC BSD.
Right.
You know, we're talking to Chris Moore from that project next week.
Next week,
so,
right, yeah.
So I really want to give it a run this weekend and see how it plays out and everything.
Yeah. I wish I had an extra machine. I could throw that stuff on it.
I got an extra spare drive. I have hot swap drives, so pull them in them out real quick.
That's an idea.
Hot swap drives. Sounds
hot
like
swap.
A Barney
hot
song.
Swapping.
Hot swap drives.
Hot swap drives. See Pat Rudd. See Pat Rudd.
But no, it's really interesting that you bring up the fact that some of these distributions have, you know, all these CDs that you have to get. I didn't know you had to go through
it's
five
crazy,
CDs.
Crazy, man.
Well, now, Slackware.
The Sousa ones, you always have to go through, like, all 50 of them.
Even well, I don't know. See, I did Sousa once. It was, like, Sousa 7, maybe? But this was a long time ago. I didn't like it then, so I just haven't, you know, I haven't really played with it much since then. But, like, and Slackware comes with four CDs, right? You get four CDs in the set.
Yeah, but two of them are source code, right?
But, no, well, like, they got extras and
extras.
A live CD kind of thing and the book and all this. And in order to get an install, like, you only really need
two.
The first one. No, you're a real
well,
one.
You
need
the
first
KDE
one.
Stuff.
You need the KDE.
And X, what, did they, it's just KDE on the second one, or did
I,
they move
I
XFCE
believe,
on the second one?
No, XFCE is
on
the first
one,
man. Which is what I use, so, like, that's all I had to use, you know, put it in, boom, you're done. No, you know, extra four CDs worth of stuff. Holy moly.
Yeah, I've done Sousa installs with only one CD, and then you need to go out to their FTP site and get everything
right.
That you actually wanted. You know what? I absolutely hate digging through for some reason, any RPM distro, for some reason. I just hate it.
You know,
even Debian was a little bit like that, too, where you had to look in the potato directory. And then
Fedora wasn't too bad. I was able to put apt-get in front of it, and it handled it pretty well. I hear you can do the same thing with Sousa, too, now.
Put
you can use apt-get.
Apt-get on Sousa, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Hey, you know what? I like CentOS. But that's because I don't do anything with it.
Yeah, it's just running.
You know what I mean? And the only reason I'm using the only reason I'm running CentOS is because that's the base operating system for Asterisk at Home, the distribution. And like, dude, like if you looked in there, in the Asterisk at Home when it's running,
you see CentOS, all these things going.
There's nothing.
Yeah.
There's nothing in the operating system. Like they have, you know. The init scripts to start it up, and then it just passes it over.
Down, yeah.
Yeah, it just passes it over to Asterisk after that. There's no, like, you can't, I can't burn a DVD in there. I got a DVD burner in this stupid thing. I was going to, you know, I figure I'd just use it in there since I have, like, a 40-gig hard drive.
Get it out of
there,
man.
No. You can't get in there to use crap. There's no, there are no applications on there. But, I'll tell you what, runs Asterisk at home like a bat out of hell.
Why don't you just type, doesn't it use apt?
I don't think so, dude.
No.
Oh, yum.
It's Red Hat.
It's Red Hat. It's an RPM thingy.
Yeah, yum. Yeah, but I'm not, I don't want to, you know, I was going to initially, and now I don't even want to piss with it because it's just doing.
As long as it works, don't screw with it.
It's running my PBX.
Tell that to Dan.
It works good.
What?
Tell that to Dan. Dan, we're running a show. Hey, how about
it only runs out?
How about I reconfigure the computer that's running all the audio? Yeah.
No, let's compile the kernel. We still have 2 minutes.
I think we get myth on there.
I'm going to run transcode. I'm re-encoding my whole DVD collection, the DivX, right now, while the show's going.
Yep. We just got that driver sounds a little funky. We'll just, you know, compile one real quick and try and implement it while we're talking.
Holy crap.
Yeah, it's okay. Pick on Dan Day. That's
It's Thanksgiving tomorrow.
Yes,
man.
It is.
Holy Jumano.
Yes, it is.
Alan, you didn't bring your turkey and gravy soda.
The turkey is...
No, I didn't bring it with me.
It's
going to
be cooking.
Have you tasted it?
Did you try it yet?
No, I haven't opened the box of the turkey and gravy.
How much did you say that
pussy
stuff was?
I think the six-pack is like $20.
$20?
Holy
bucks.
Crap.
I saw it. Yeah, but it's going like...
That's like the collector's thing, isn't it?
That's like buying bottled air, man.
But it's one of those profit things where it's going to like a
charity,
thing.
I saw a thing on Food
Channel. How about you sell it
company
to me at the right price, and I'll decide how much I want to give to that charity.
Shit,
well, you'll have to talk to Target about that one.
That's
I'll
Jones,
give you $250 for it, so I can make sure that the rest of that, you know, the other $17.50 is going to the children's charity.
Yeah,
pecan pie and sweet potato.
I bet you couldn't guess from looking at our pictures that we people here at the tech show like food. But you couldn't guess that. I'm going to test that theory tomorrow, I'll tell you.
Then you fall asleep and drool over yourself.
That's the idea right there.
Naked on your couch. Family going,
you know,
in
you
and
get
out
the Al Bundy thing, you know, with your hand on your pants. It really doesn't
what
matter.
What you do is you get like a porta potty, you put it right next to the table. You know,
build it into the couch.
You just like lean off the side, crap on the floor, and just keep eating. Some pudding for the dog. This is Sasha's link. Here, this is our explicit rating.
Right, jeez.
Fucking iTunes.
Alan, poop boy, come pick it up.
No.
Thanksgiving. Stuffing.
Bummer, I can't find it on the Target site this week.
Go to Jones website, Jones Soda.
Yeah, that's where I'm going now.
Jones.
What are you thankful for there, Pat?
I'm thankful for the cool listeners that we have, man. You guys are awesome.
Both of them.
Yes.
All four of you.
You and you too.
Turkey and gravy delight.
What are you thankful for there, Link?
I'm thankful for all kinds of crap. Stuff too numerous even to mention.
So you're not even going to try.
But, you know,
all right.
Mostly.
Here's the flavors.
Mostly.
Brussels
I'm
sprouts
for
with prosciutto.
Dan's back massages.
Yeah. And I'll use the middle finger.
Foot rubs.
The middle leg tonight.
Yeah, foot rubs.
Go ahead, Alan. I'm sorry.
No problem. The soda flavors are Brussels sprouts with prosciutto, cranberry sauce, turkey and gravy.
That's probably not too
cranberry
bad.
Sauce, probably
cranberry
good.
Cranberry season, probably.
Wild herb stuffing and pumpkin pie. And also included in the box is a serving spoon, moistened towelette, and a wine list.
A serving spoon?
I have no clue.
What the hell is
all
that?
All sodas are completely vegetarian, certified kosher, and contain zero caffeine, calories, and carbs.
Mm.
Yeah, I saw a special on the Food Channel about that company.
Yeah, it was on Unwrapped, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You got some company based in Brooklyn to do the food, the flavoring.
The benefits are for the St. Jude's. St. Jude's Children's Research Hospital.
Are you an anti-Semite?
No, I just screwed up that one real good there.
Listen, I want to give some quick shout-outs. And the reason I want to do this is because I want to encourage the rest of you boners to actually put yourself on the Frapper map so we know where you're coming from.
It's moving.
So,
the 188.
From, if I don't wait for the JavaScript thing. From Colorado, Says none.
Utah, nobody.
Yeah, Kyle.
Utah, nobody.
How you doing? here's where we find another one. From Tony, Alabama, Tech Wizard.
We got somebody in Israel.
This is right, right?
El Salvador.
Well, that's what I'm trying to get. I'm gonna try and get
South
a
Africa,
of them,
Mexico City.
But I got to wait for the map to shift over. Connections slightly on the slow side.
Israel?
Yeah.
New Zealand? Taiwan?
Put the Frapper address up on the IRC again.
Now we've had India
again.
We've gotten emails
they
from
go to the website
from people in India, but nobody's posted on the Frapper site from India. So if you're a listener in India, man, go on there and be the first one.
Yeah, we don't have anybody in India. We don't have anybody in Russia. Do we not have anything in China yet either? Do we?
Well, Taiwan, but that doesn't really count. Depends who you talk to.
I'm gonna wait for this stupid map to come up again, man. We really need to, you know, damn, we gotta hook you up with some more bandwidth or something.
I got the map, and I'm looking at it right now.
That's probably why I can't get it out. I'm trying to pick a couple of people and say hello to them, and Dan's over here hogging a freaking bandwidth.
We're very late in the Asian.
All right. Rabbit Ear from Anchorage, Alaska.
That's pretty cool.
That's cool. You're out there all alone by yourself there, dude.
Stay warm.
Nobody uses Linux
DNS
but you out there.
DNS server from Australia.
Medar from Taipei. That'd be Taiwan there, that Taipei place. That's pretty cool. Ibrahim from Cairo.
Germany from Egypt. Hamilton, Waikato, New Zealand.
Yeah.
If I pronounce that right, wrong. Don't forget our dude from Israel.
DNS server from Adelaide, South Australia.
No, we got somebody from...
we got a lot of all kinds of people.
Where is it? Come on.
Also got Jamaica.
Michael Vaught from Norman, Oklahoma.
Yeah, a gal from Israel.
Ian Stoffberg, Cape
Ibrahim
Town.
From Cairo, Egypt.
Cape Town, yes, that's a new one that came out. That's cool, man.
Did you do the South African?
Yeah, I just did. Alan just read it.
He lives in the same town where Ubuntu was founded.
Simon Mickelson. From Denmark. I would pronounce the city, man. I have no idea.
Not even going to try.
Not even going to try because I just screw it up. He's from Denmark, okay?
I didn't set this up, by the way. This was set up by Ceruso from I think he's from Copenhagen, Ceruso.
Cool.
He's always on the bulletin board, Ceruso.
Cool. But the rest of you want to maybe get your name mentioned on here sometime? Hey. Sign up on the Frapper, man. It's on the webpage.
Even have Jamaica on there.
Yeah, wait, I saw that today.
Gotta go with Jamaica, really man. Cool, man.
We're light on the South America.
And beware that any of you who do sign up on any on the Frapper map with your address and live in any of these luxurious, exotic places, we might just, you know, end up at your house one time to stay over for a week or something like that for vacation. So.
Honduras. Cool.
We'll be looking
for you. Got a Honduras?
Yeah, Omar from... No, El Salvador.
Nice from El Salvador.
El Salvador.
I'm sorry.
We also got someone
from... Sign up on the Frapper map. Send us money so we can come visit.
Yes.
Buy a DVD.
Plane tickets. There we go.
We just need somebody from Antarctica.
Yep.
Greenland.
And listen, everybody, once again, I want to tell you thank you very much for listening to this show, which is 111. Happy Thanksgiving. 111. And we're gonna catch you next week.
We'll be talking to Chris Moore from the PSBSD project.
PCBSD. That's what it is. PCBSD.
Not PSP as in portable place.
No. PCBSD.
PlayStation Portable.
And the week after that, we're talking to Greg Mancusi Ungaro from Novell.
Novell. So we can grill him about all of this happy, you know, KDE business that they got going on. And we can also ask him why SUSE takes 75 CDs to install. That's, you know, what I want to know. But anyway, yeah, like Alan says, happy Turkey Day.
Happy Thanksgiving.
And you got some music to push us out with there, Dan? He's still over there, you know, picking his crack or something.
Yeah, I got some.
And an evening without gas.
Yeah.
Just because you didn't hear it didn't mean doesn't mean it didn't happen, okay. Right? You see, he's got. Is he in one of the hard chairs over there?
It's a good thing we're doing the show before Thanksgiving.
That usually gives the more of the rapping sound.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Sweet potato, man. That'll do it.
I'm not a big fan of the sweet potato.
I love sweet potato.
I'm going to hammer them suckers tomorrow, man.
I can't stand sometimes when people make them with marshmallows. That's disgusting.
You know, that's what my kid wants. I don't like them
that
way.
I hate that, man.
She wants them that way tomorrow.
It's not candy.
So I have to make them
it's
that
potato.
Way.
Sweet potato.
But you can just, like, scrape it off the top.
I like some butter with a little bit of cinnamon. Perfect. Yeah.
Candy.
You like a little butt with some cinnamon?
Candy.
Candy, candy.
Marshmallows.
Well. You going to play your outro music?
Or are we just all going to hum?
Just shut the freaking recording off. Is that what you're going to
wasn't thinking.
What's
that,
this quote from? It's not my damn planet, monkey boy.
No idea.
Sorry.
It's not my damn planet, monkey boy. No? You know what that is from? what is the other one?
See, now he doesn't even
Buckaroo
know.
Buckaroo Banzai. I don't know.
Yeah, it is.
Buckaroo Banzai.
That's a good one. From
now I'm going to have to go watch that now. You know I got the DVD at home.
It's not my damn planet, monkey boy.
That was a good
movie. Did you watch it last week?
No, I didn't. I've seen that movie a couple dozen times.
That was a great movie.
Buckaroo Banzai.
You don't piss me off when they put it on TBS. They cut the credits at the end. You know where they have them all come walking out?
They speed it up.
Yeah. That sucked.
Wherever you go, there you are.
Wherever you go, there you are. That's right.
They should make a sequel to that movie.
That
would be fun.
Movie.
How does this theme song go, Alan? Remember?
Buckaroo Banzai. Oh, yeah.
No.
No, I did, yeah.
Not Alan. Not Alan.
I've seen the movie, but I don't remember the theme. It's one of probably the few ones I don't remember theme
I'm
music.
Waiting
real
I'm
good
waiting
too.
For a sequel to Real Genius.
Who was in that?
Val Kilmer.
Yeah, what was that about?
It's bunch of really smart people at some college. They develop a weapon. They didn't know what it was before. It winds up being a military weapon.
Dude, that was like
mid-80s.
That's a total 80s movie. I saw
blew
that on
TV. The house up with
it
popcorn.
Went popcorn, yes. Right, yeah.
And I never liked that
they
one.
Had the, they had the Star Wars weapon that shot the house and blew it up with popcorn in it or something. It
was, yeah.
Holy crap. That
Stop
brings
touching
me back,
yourself.
Man. Yeah, that's right.
That guy's funny.
That was funny.
He was in Bachelor Party, that guy.
Stop touching yourself. This is God speaking.
Should I play us out?
Yes.
Play us out. Ow. Good night, everybody. It's supposed to be like Thanksgiving music, not Halloween music. Like Rocky and Bullwinkle there for a minute.
Well, we do have to do the Rocky and Bullwinkle theme, you know?
We definitely have to get Rocky and Bullwinkle.
Speed Racer. The Japanese version of Speed Racer. I've got that somewhere at work. I have to dig it up.
I got Rocky and Bullwinkle on a DVD at home. I'm sure I could pull some music off of that somehow. Go.
You know I want to tap that ass, right?
When you were making egg foo young in the kitchen, I was in the dining room having sushi.
So we can paint anything we want?
Anything at all.
How about if I paint your fine ass? Yeah, with my tongue brush.
That's what Alan said on the porch last week after, you know, the show was over. He was like, hey, it's painting time, Dan.
So what movie over. Is the tap the ass quote from?
What?
What movie is tap that ass quote from?
Same movie as same show as the tongue brush. It's from Stella.
I've never seen that. Is that on like at 3:00 in the morning?
No. Well, it's on at different times. It's on Comedy Central. So they play it like 3 or 4 times.
It's like Michael Ian Black.
Right. Oh, it's hilarious, man. You can go to heavy.com.
They have episodes of Donald?
And they have, they don't have episodes from the show. They have like, it's completely different episodes. And what you see on heavy.com is a lot more profane than what's on Comedy Central. It's pretty interesting. But it's definitely worth a look. A look-see.
So, Al,
a look-see.
You keep saying Santa's going to bring us new microphones. What are we talking about here?
No, it was a mistake. Santa's going to bring us all a bone. Alan's going to be coming down our chimney.
Sweet. Yeah, this one's shot, man.
Oh.
This is an old crappy one.
All right, I installed the WLAN drivers, finally. I'm going to shut this off. Good night, everybody.
I think we have impedance problems with this mic. I lowered it, and it sounded louder.
Barrr.
Threw it off. The impedance is probably off. Who knows? Maybe it's short again.
Whiny. You know, I've gotten to that point where I drank enough beers that I never even started to catch a buzz, but it's just making me tired. You know what I mean? You drink that many, you're just like, oh, I can just go take a nap now. But I can't. Because I got to get the pod, the shows up. And
but this time it wasn't just me. It seemed it was everybody except Dan.
What?
And Link to a lesser extent. He couldn't hear anybody.
No, he couldn't hear me either, so I just shut up and listened to Dan.
Kind of sucked because I wanted to ask him some questions.
Next time we'll use the X. I thought about saying, hey, let me call you back. But I don't know.
No, I sent you guys a question about that IAXCOM. Do you have to open up any ports for that?
No, it's the same thing. It's asterisk standards is their own protocol.
It seemed to detect my settings from somewhere.
I had to put mine in.
It was odd. I don't know where I pulled it off of. The X light, maybe?
I don't know.
Pretty odd.
I don't know.
So Dan, you got the script for next week ready?
No. Alan has to approve it first. He has to do the finishing touches. You going to be shopping there on Friday, Alan, on your day off?
No.
I'm going to stop off on the way to work. Take pictures. At 5 a.m., I'm going to stop over at the shopping center in Phillipsburg and take a picture of the people standing in front of Walmart and Toys R Us. People are on crack, man.
I think, where would I want to go on Friday? I already went to the comic book store today, so.
All right, I can't get. Something's wrong here. I can't get the WLAN drivers to work.
Are you using that DW? I was thinking if you were using the USB one.
It's not a new. All I did was install it off the. I wonder if I got enough hot plug installed.
I'm gonna sign off.
Maybe.
Good night, everybody. Good night, everybody.
I guess I'm gonna sign off too, so I can. The Linux Link Turkey Show. Up next, all the crap from before the show. And Alan actually talks before the show. Stay tuned.